everyone. This is Smart Mouth. I'm your host, Catherine Spires, and I'm here to blow your minds, you know, a little bit about food history. But first, put your business socks on. I want to talk about the Smart Mouth newsletter, which is launching next week. I'm terrified. I'm going to start with a free version, then switch to paid once I've convinced you all that it's worth it. And it won't just be my writing in the newsletter. I'm paying other food writers to contribute. I'm going to make journalism a viable career again if it's the last thing I do. So hopefully you'll end up subscribing to the paid version as well. I will be blitzing social media about it when it is live, but if you want to, you can go sign up now at smartmouth.substack.com. You can also contribute financially to Smart Mouth via Patreon. That money will go towards podcast costs first, and then the newsletter as well. And even $1 a month is fantabulous. That is at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. One last note, I'm experimenting with Instagram Live again. So on Thursday, October 10th at 4 p.m. Pacific time, I'll be there answering questions and whatnot for about 15 minutes, keeping it light. I am on Instagram at smartmouthpodcast. So come talk to me. Now enjoy the show with one of my favorite chefs, Margarita Mansky, who co-runs two of my favorite LA restaurants, Republique and Sorry Sorry Store. We recorded at Republique, so you'll hear some restaurant noises in the background. And I always ask show guests what they had for breakfast to do the sound check. In this case, I left it in the episode because I liked her answer. Enjoy. Tell me what you had for breakfast today.
I just had a lobster omelet, actually.
A lobster omelet?
Yeah, that's unusual, though.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, then why did you have one?
I don't know. I just wanted to switch it up.
I like it. Yeah, switch it up with lobster. Why not?
I usually have breakfast with my kids at home.
Uh-huh.
But then lately, I don't know why I'm not able to sit down with them anymore to have breakfast because I have to cook their breakfast. I have to prepare their lunch since summer is over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So now it's back to school.
Okay.
Lunches and all that. So then I come here and I'm super hungry.
Uh-huh.
And I just look at the menu and I usually have the same thing every day or two things. I have either the chia pudding or the California breakfast.
What's in the California breakfast?
It's a small bowl of chia pudding with like a toast with avocado, pretty much an avocado toast.
Okay,
with
yeah.
Tomatoes and, but a little bit Japanese take on it, I guess. Yuzu dressing.
Ooh.
And all that. But today, no, no.
You were feeling fancy today.
I was feeling fancy for sure. I guess I've never had it. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try it.
Is it on the menu?
It's on the menu today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And we, of course, are talking about Republique, which is a restaurant owned by Margarita Mansky, which is you.
Yes,
hi.
Thank you.
Thank
hi.
You. So you're a chef, you're a restaurant owner, and you're a cookbook author. James Beard nominated cookbook author. Why not?
Yes, I guess.
You've got a lot going on, plus the children that you mentioned.
Plus the children, yeah.
If anyone can hear background noise in this episode, it's because we are... Republique is a very... popular restaurant, sorry, Republique. Republique is a very popular restaurant. Still, you've been around for a few years.
I think it's this November is coming up our sixth year.
That's like ancient in restaurant terms, right?
I don't know. It seems like we're still figuring things out. Like we just opened, so not. You would think that we would, you know, we got it down, but. You know,
I don't know. Maybe not. There's got to be something new every day, especially, you know, having been here a couple times, you have so many customers coming through and not everybody is going to act like a normal person when they go to a restaurant.
Not totally. I mean, the breakfast, lunch, dinner,
mm-hmm.
And especially the weekends is just crazy.
Yeah.
We get about, I think, close to 900, even 1,000 people. For brunch.
Oh my goodness.
On weekends. Yeah. So it's a beast.
And you don't take reservations, right?
During the day, we don't. Nighttime is totally different. So it's two very different concepts, day and night. Okay. So nighttime, we do take reservations, and it's more geared on, you know, casual fine dining.
Okay.
Full service.
Uh-huh. And different but food. Brunch, people are lining up.
Brunch, people are lining up. Yeah, it's counter service and that's it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. People love brunch. That's like the main meal people will line up for.
Totally. Los Angeles.
Yeah, so you figured that out. You got that part down. So I wanted to mostly talk to you about Hollow Hollow because, okay, not to suck up, but the one at another one of your restaurants, Sorry Store, yes, is so, so good.
Thank you.
It's amazing. And then it's also cool because it's so pretty by design. Hollow Hollow overall is just like a really pretty dish to look
colorful.
At.
Colorful. Yep.
So colorful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I am pronouncing it right.
Yes,
right?
You are.
Hollow Hollow.
Yeah. Some people pronounce it Halo Halo.
I know. It's hard to, I always have to think about it because it does say Halo.
Yes, you are pronouncing it right.
Good.
Hollow Hollow.
Good. And there's similar dessert items in a lot of different cultures around the world.
Yeah.
Granitas and frio and shave ice from Hawaii and kakigori from Japan,
yes,
which is its closest relative.
Yes.
Maybe even its child when we talk about the history of it.
Yeah, I think so.
So it means, it's true, isn't it, that it means mix, essentially? Hollow means mix.
Yeah, literally, literal translation is mix. Because hollow in Tagalog means to mix. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. And is that something that happens in Tagalog a lot with the like doubling up of the words?
Yes.
Why is that?
I don't know. yeah, but there's a lot of words that are repeated, just like halo halo, and there's like a few more.
What's the one with the like buffet?
Turo turo.
Turo turo, right?
That's literal translation, point point.
Because you're pointing at what you want.
Yes.
That's great. It gets the point across.
It's funny. I mean, one thing about Filipinos is they really have, you know, they have a certain humor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I like that.
They make, you know, they try to make, get fun, you know, like fun out of a lot of things, you know, make it fun, make it catchy.
Why not?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's great. So let's talk about what we think Hollow Hollow is and like if you agree.
Okay.
I mean, it's shaved ice, evaporated milk, and then things like cubed jellies, fresh fruit, sweetened beans, sometimes ice cream,
yep,
various syrups. Would you agree that that's generally a description of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's composed of,
generally,
traditionally.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there anything missing from that description that's necessary to make it hollow hollow?
I think a lot of people put the ube jam.
Okay, so is it usually in jam form?
It's usually in jam form, but also ice cream form.
Okay.
Sometimes it's done.
Uh-huh.
The jackfruit, I think, is very important in it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a jackfruit cooked in syrup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And I have a general question, actually. Ube being, we translate it as like purple yam.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have it in dessert form, like pies and ice cream, as you mentioned, is that food coloring that makes it that purple?
I think so.
Okay. It seems like it has to be, right? Because natural colors aren't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you see like the real purple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've made ube cake before.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really come out deep, dark purple unless, yeah, you put food coloring.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it usually comes out like light purple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A more natural pastel-y, but
exactly.
It's more exciting when it's like a deep lavender.
Yeah. It's like catches the eye, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Did you set out to specialize in pastry?
You know what? I think I did. When I was a kid, I loved to bake.
Uh-huh.
And I would just bake. But then, you know, and I knew that I wanted to be in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I always thought, okay, I'm going to be a pastry chef. But for some reason, I went to culinary school and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to take pastry.
Okay.
I'm going to take like the culinary side because I was not confident in my cooking skills at all.
Ah,
like
okay.
I felt like I didn't know how to season with salt and pepper. I didn't, you know, I was just thought, you know, I have to learn this mm-hmm. for my own, like, my own sake, I guess.
Yeah.
Since I think I was confident in pastry, mm-hmm. or I thought I had, you know, a knack for it,
uh-huh.
but definitely not the cooking side.
Okay.
So I went out, went to culinary school, never went into pastry, went to work in the hot side as well,
uh-huh.
you know, for like my first 10 years of my career, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I totally got the confidence in cooking.
Nice.
Yeah. And becoming a pastry chef or like going to the pastry side was not planned at all.
Okay.
It just happened. Yeah.
Did it happen after, because you work with your husband?
Yes.
And so did you guys sort of decide who was going to take what when you started working together, or had you already decided to focus on pastry?
Well, he knows very little about pastry.
Got it.
I mean, he can make a great dessert. Don't get me wrong. Like, if he can think on his feet really fast and just whip up something.
Uh-huh.
But as far as like baking a cake and, mm-hmm. you know, laminated doughs, anything like that, I think breads,
uh-huh.
he knows just a little bit. So, and I had a little bit of pastry background
right.
at that time. So it kind of like naturally fell on me. It was like,
Okay,
you're doing it. So.
Right. It's like, let's play to our strengths.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Got it. Well, one thing that I love about your food, and I think everyone does too, is that, you know, it's not just one type. Like, this restaurant has a French name, mm-hmm. and Church and State, a previous restaurant, was technically French.
True.
But being in California, one of the things that, like, we get made fun of a lot is just, like, mixing it up and doing whatever we want. But I actually think that's really cool.
Yeah.
So you've been sort of introducing a lot of Filipino food onto the menus of your restaurants that aren't even like necessarily Filipino.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always had, at least when I get the opportunity and it makes sense mm-hmm. and I'm not forcing it
yeah.
just so I'm Filipino. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Just because I love the flavors that I grew up with, you know? So yeah, I mean, to make it interesting for the customers and for me as well, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Does it feel weird to you as a Filipina chef when people are like, Filipino food is having a moment?
I guess a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are, Filipino food definitely is more known now than
uh-huh.
ever.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think there's enough Filipino restaurants or chefs to say that it's kind of having a moment compared to Thai food or Vietnamese or, you uh-huh. know, I think we need more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. Sure. Just like from a consumer standpoint.
And yeah. And I think, I don't know. I think we have to just, I mean, you mentioned duro-duro,
mm-hmm.
the point thing. I mean, that's traditional. And unfortunately, I think it's food that's been prepared like hours before.
Okay.
And it's in like chafing dishes.
Uh-huh.
So I think it loses the freshness, the quality.
I see, yeah.
And maybe it's not appealing to a lot of people.
Okay.
But I think we should probably, aside from that, there's a lot more, you know, that we can make it fresh, make it more interesting,
mm-hmm.
use better ingredients, better cuts of meat, better fish, better, you know. All yeah. these things.
Okay.
So
you feel, it seems like you feel like it's still in its ascendancy.
I definitely, yeah. Okay. I don't think it's definitely there.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
More to work on.
For sure.
Just giving everybody more work to do.
I mean, always, right?
Yeah. Do you think that you'll open more Filipino restaurants?
That's kind of tough.
No, decide the rest of your life right now.
Who knows? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I can't foresee right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're focused on sorry, sorry. I mean, that still is, it being Filipino food, I think it's the most, what do you call that? Like accessible to, you know, people who've never seen it before and more relatable in terms of rice.
Right. Because people understand rice bowls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And for the other, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I would like to, but I mean, that is already kind of a challenge, you know.
In what sense?
Just, you know, like I said, not a lot of people are familiar with Filipino food. And, you know, next to a Chinese restaurant at the Grand Central Market, you know, everybody just gravitates to the Chinese restaurant because everybody knows Chinese food, right? So it's still a challenge to like get it out there and you know, introduce it to people who just don't know anything about it. Like, what is Filipino food?
Right. So So yeah, you have that extra work of still having to explain it to people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the dishes are just not familiar, you know, when you, other than adobo, maybe.
Right. And then you also serve there that buko pie.
Buko pie,
which is incredible. Thank How is you. It that rich? I don't understand.
Thank you.
And it's buko means young coconut?
Buko means young coconut. And that's actually a buko pie is a traditional pie that comes from like Laguna, which is about an hour from the Philippines. Sorry, an hour from Manila, I should say. So it's kind of like a riff on that.
Oh, okay. That
traditional pie.
All right. Riffs on traditional pies are usually pretty good.
Yeah.
So, halo halo. I mean, do you feel like this idea that it comes from kakigori, which is the Japanese shaved ice, makes sense? Should I explain it a little more?
Sure.
Or, I mean, okay. Because there's so little about it that I was like, maybe this is just an idea that one person wrote and everyone bought into it. But here's the theory. Is that going back all the way to like the 11th century in Japan, it was this huge luxury for the aristocrats to bring in blocks of ice from lakes around Kyoto and shave it down and pour syrups on it. And this is kind of true everywhere on the planet when they figured out in warmer climates that there was ice and that they could chip it into blocks and transport it. And clearly that was only for rich people.
Okay.
So the history of frozen desserts globally is one of exclusivity up until refrigeration.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It was always for fancy people.
Okay.
And it wasn't until, you know, like I said, the 1800s when people could try it more, when we figured out like how to freeze things and keep them frozen.
Okay.
And so importers and exporters from Japan started moving to the Philippines in earnest in like the 1300s when they were like really setting up shop. Of course, it's the Pacific Rim. People have been moving all over the place. And then about 200 years later, around the 1500s, so it goes in a circle basically because Spain came over and colonized the Philippines and brought Jesuits with them.
Yes.
And then those Jesuits moved up into Japan to proselytize. And so a bunch of Japanese people converted to Catholicism, and the Japanese government was like, nope, we don't like that. Get out of here. So when they left, they moved to the Philippines because it was run by Spain, so they had like safe harbor there.
Okay.
So that's when like a ton more Japanese people moved to the Philippines.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. For religious purposes. And so the idea is that shaved ice from the colder parts of Japan, when Japanese people moved to the Philippines, they were like, how can we continue this? It was like just one of many business ideas. And then there's something, do you know what this is? A mongoya?
Mongo. Is that the bean?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that was something that a lot of Japanese people in the Philippines specialized in.
Okay.
So the growing of it, but then the serving of it, cheap snack, like a roadside snack that you would add sugar to.
Okay.
Does this ring true to you?
Not as a cheap snack.
Okay.
I've never had that before. I've had, usually mongo is used in halo halo.
Mm-hmm.
sweetened and cooked in sugar syrup mm-hmm. and then jarred. But also, we eat it as a savory dish.
Okay.
Like almost, it looks like split pea soup, I would say.
Ah, okay.
We cook a little pork, saute a little pork, onions, tomato, garlic, add the beans, stock, fish sauce, cook it down, and we eat it with rice.
So bean soup is also another universal.
But I've never had it as the street food snack.
So there might be a reason for this.
Okay.
Mongolia became quite popular in the very early 1900s, mm-hmm. and a lot of these would turn into it would start with a stall of one person selling mongo, but okay. then they'd add more chairs and add more chairs, and more people were into it. So they would grow into these like multi-vendor areas, okay. kind of like a night market type situation. Yeah. And so they were adding sugar to them, and then they were adding ice to them, but it was sort of like on a plate. So it was like a cold summer dessert. And then also part of the reason why that worked out is because it was actually America that started exporting their own ice.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
They would freeze it from apparently like the Midwest and the East Coast, and they would ship it over. Specifically, the end goal was Australia, but they would stop everywhere that they could sell ice along the way.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like the first pre-refrigeration way that the Philippines was getting ice. But then a group of American businessmen also built something called the Insular Ice Plant.
Okay.
So they started manufacturing ice in the Philippines as well. We've got a lot of Japanese people or people of Japanese descent or mixed descent in the Philippines. We're leading up to World War II.
Okay.
Things got real bad then in a lot of ways, but specifically with Japanese-Filipino relations. Yeah. I didn't realize that Japan attacked the Philippines almost exactly 10 hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. I guess they were just,
wow.
It was a Pacific Rim blitz. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. All at the same time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, of course, you know, Japan was particularly cruel to the Philippines during World War II. And then the United States, in the way that it does, kind of tried to hit it from both ends. Uh-huh. They were both bombing the Philippines and arming the revolutionaries who were fighting against Japan.
Okay. Yes.
You know, I think we've done that in like every country.
Yes.
So that's a complicated relationship. What the Japanese people did to the Philippine people was more obvious. So right after World War II, Japanese people were not treated very well. And a lot of them moved back to Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why sort of the mongo as sweet dessert tradition kind of left, because I guess it had been all Japanese people.
That's right. And they left.
Yeah. And then people who were, you know, whose families had been in the Philippines for generations but still had Japanese last names, uh-huh. for instance, apparently a fair number of them changed their last names.
Really?
Yeah, so they could stick around without getting hassled. But of course, you know, you got to figure, if you're going through all the trouble of changing your last name, you aren't also trying to run a business that's associated with Japanese. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So it seems like really quickly post-World War II, even though this whole dessert history had come from Japan, it like switched and just became like a native Filipino thing because no one was claiming it as Japanese.
Nobody associated it to Japanese.
Yeah.
That makes sense now. Totally.
Right? Yeah, yeah, I think
totally
so.
Totally makes sense.
I mean, and especially, this sounds kind of stupid, but I really do mean it. If it's something that everyone wants, mm-hmm. like someone's going to pick it up and create a new history for it. So that no one has to feel guilty.
Totally, yeah. Totally. It all makes sense now.
Okay.
All
so if that rings true, then I think that we can accept it as the theory.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I honestly do not know the history of halo-halo. I have read things about it did come from the Japanese kakigori and mm-hmm. all that. But in the Philippines, it's totally not associated with Japanese
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kind of like a little disconnect when you read that. But then now that you
right.
tell me all of this, it does make sense.
Yeah, yeah. It does yeah. seem like a totally reasonable theory.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing, though. Theories are theories. It could all be made up.
Yeah.
Who knows?
True.
But it seems reasonable. And that's kind of an interesting story. And it also kind of illuminates all the weird stuff that went on in the Pacific Theater during World War II.
During that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Halo-Halo, even though if it's weird because it went from super expensive in Japan to like it kind of transferred into this like dessert of the people.
Street food.
Yeah.
Almost even, yeah.
In the Philippines, is it served in every type of establishment?
No.
Okay.
Not every type of establishment for sure. It's served for sure in like traditional Filipino restaurants, restaurants that serve only Filipino food, traditional Filipino desserts. And one of them is always halo halo.
Okay.
Like it's quintessential Filipino dessert.
I want to ask you more questions about that, but what are the other quintessential Filipino desserts?
Well, okay, halo halo and all the other desserts are not only eaten after, you know, after a meal or dessert time. After a meal, but it's also merienda.
Oh,
it could,
okay.
It could also, it's also eaten as, you know, an afternoon snack. And that we got from the Spanish people.
Right.
The other things on like traditional dessert always is a banana spring roll called turon.
Oh, okay. That's something that I'm seeing more of in Los Angeles recently.
We have served that at Sari Sari for a short period. And that one is, you know, Thai people have spring rolls and all that. So I'm sure it's, you know, taken from that influence. But, or Chinese. But it's a banana with jackfruit inside. Sometimes it has ube.
Mm-hmm.
And then rolled up and then deep fried. And then it's covered in like caramel sugar.
Nice.
Yeah. That and another one is the coconut pandan. Which is coconut milk, pandan jellies, like strings of coconut, young coconut with ube ice cream or coconut ice cream. I mean, those are like, and then you have all the rice cakes.
There's okay.
Like so many different rice cakes.
Yeah.
That we make there, different colors, different, you know, textures. There's a lot. There's a lot of sweets there that is not known.
They should be. They all sound really good. Is the pandan served like sort of like what texture is that?
It's usually in jellies, just made in jellies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
All right.
But pandan is usually used to infuse a lot of things, you know, mm-hmm. even rice.
Mm-hmm.
We cook rice and put like a few leaves of pandan there for the aroma. And then it's infused in coconut milk. It's in, you know, it's in a lot of things.
So tell me for you, does halo halo have to be served in like a parfait dish? Does the vessel matter?
Not always in one of those, what do you call it, milkshake glasses?
Yes, yeah.
No. I can serve it in a bowl. Some restaurants serve it in like a, you know, a sundae bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the banana split thingy.
Not the banana, but it's a... It's a bowl.
Oh, like the smaller coupe?
Yeah, like a big.
Yes. Coupe. Okay.
Like a large coupe.
Yeah. 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 The glass dish thing, whether it's the large coupe or the milkshake thingy, is that to like show off all the colors and layers?
Yeah.
And
yeah. And I guess you gotta mix it before you eat it, because you don't really eat it like layer by layer.
Yeah.
You have the ice cream, you have the crushed ice, the evaporated milk, and all the stuff in the bottom. So you traditionally get all of that mixed up together,
right?
Like ice cream melted in it, and then you start eating it.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's a good tip for people who've never had it before. So at Sari Sari, your other restaurant, I don't know, you guys probably change it up sometime, but on the website it says you do a seasonal granita.
Mm-hmm.
So that means whatever fruit is in season,
yes.
Right? Okay. And then a leche flan.
Yes.
So do you chop that up and put like chunks of flan into it?
It's just one piece of flan. And that's another thing that I forgot to mention when you were telling me the components.
Uh-huh.
Leche flan is also...
That's key?
Key.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you mean for you personally or universally?
I think if you go to a restaurant, a Filipino restaurant, and you get a halo halo, there's normally a leche flan.
Got it.
Which is really weird because it's just like plopped on top. It's like, okay. But yeah, I think traditionally it does have a leche flan.
Okay, and then you do that and ice cream.
Yes, that ice cream.
So that's pretty rich, right?
It's pretty rich, and we also do, instead of just shaved ice, the ice is flavored with, it's normally like, right now I think we do watermelon ice, so it's just blended up watermelon, and then we add a little lime to it maybe, a little sugar depending on, you know, the sweetness, and freeze it, and then we shave that.
Oh, okay. So, okay, so you do shaved ice, not crushed ice.
Yes.
Apparently there's some, I wouldn't say disagreement, there's some opinions about which way to do it.
Totally. It's normally, I don't know. I mean, we shave it in a way, not like the machine shaved ice though, because we make our own, like, kind of like granita, right?
Yeah.
With the,
yeah.
with the fruit juice. So we use like a fork.
Yeah. to you like kind of fork it out, not shave it out. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So forked ice.
Forked ice.
And then you do fresh fruit as well.
Fresh fruit, same thing, whatever's in season. So right now we put peaches and berries and and whatever's out there.
Yeah. And then coconut tapioca.
That's not traditional. That's something that, you know, I just figured that replaces, I didn't want to use evaporated milk as much as, you know, I didn't want to use anything canned or jarred.
Ah.
That was the idea of it.
Okay.
So more fresh. So that's kind of like something that I thought would replace the evaporated milk. Mm-hmm. So instead of evaporated milk, it would be like a tapioca coconut.
Pudding, you know, type?
Like thinner than a pudding, you know.
Oh, okay. Interesting, interesting. So when in the Philippines, are there like halo-halo shops? I ask this because what I really want to know is it like frozen yogurt where you say what you want your toppings to be?
No.
Okay. So if you're going to a place that serves it, you're getting it as served. You're not personalizing?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No. Yeah. It comes in a parfait glass.
Uh-huh.
And then everything's in there. You don't get to pick and choose. It is what it is.
That's funny. That wouldn't work in America. That's like a cultural thing.
So, yeah, you're stuck with all the whatever fruit that's in there.
I imagine that that leads to people having, like, favorite places to get it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's not really something that you get everywhere in the Philippines.
Yeah.
It's more a Filipino restaurant.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Filipino restaurant, meaning they serve Filipino food.
Right. Yes. And then if you have a sweet tooth, you're like, which one has my favorite halo halo? We're going to that one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's one popular one right now, and they only serve two things. Or actually, they've added to their menu, I should say. But they're famous for two things, and it's the halo halo and this rice noodle dish called pancit palabok. And their halo halo is great because it only has like the major components, not a lot of like, you know,
nonsense.
Yeah. Like I think they have the leche flan, they have the jackfruit, they have a couple other things in there, because I don't honestly, I don't like all the stuff in there.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't like the mung bean. I don't like the mungo.
Uh-huh.
I don't like the other white beans.
Uh-huh.
Anything bean, I don't like.
Okay.
In it. So, yeah, they're famous for their halo halo, and a lot of people go there.
What's it called?
It's called Razones.
Is that a chain? Or is
it's a chain. It's become a chain.
Okay.
They started in a town 2 hours away from Manila called Pampanga, which is supposedly where a lot of like famous Filipino food started, that cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're famous for food.
That sounds like a good thing to be famous for.
Yeah. So
do they get a lot of tourists who go there on like eating tours?
I think so. Mostly a lot of Filipinos, like when they're on the road to another town, they stop by. It's like a pit stop almost.
Yeah.
Have a snack there or lunch, and then
I mean, getting noodles and dessert sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Totally miss it. Yeah.
Really? Uh-huh. How often do you go to the Philippines?
Go there at least once a year.
Okay. You own a business there as well, right?
Yes. Wildflower.
So Wildflower and Raisons?
Yeah, but Raisons is not...
Not you, yeah, but yeah, just places that people should go to when they're in the Philippines.
Yeah. Definitely Wildflower. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think that we've got a lot of tips on if people want to make their own Holo Holo, what they need to be putting in it.
Totally, yeah.
And not beans if you're doing it your way. But you could try the beans. Just sugar them up. They aren't like savory beans. They're sweet beans.
They're sweet beans. Yeah, yeah, it's dessert beans.
Dessert beans, exactly. Yes. Where can people find you on social media?
I have an account.
You can just do a restaurant account instead.
It's ML Mansky. But the restaurant account obviously is Republique. And then we also have Sari Sari on there. Uh-huh. We have our Mexican restaurant called Petty Cash as well.
That's right. I had forgotten about that one. You guys have even more restaurants than I remembered.
I know.
That's why you're so busy. And then what's the book called?
Baking at Republique.
Awesome.
Yeah. Came out last, when was that? I can't even remember. June.
Last June. So. Well, I'm sure the recipes are still relevant.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Sugar and honey is what I cry for. Sugar and honey is what I die for. And darling, doll, you make my life worthwhile because I want you. Sugar and honey.
Thanks for listening, everyone. It is now time to cite my sources. Holo Holo is something that I've been a student of for a few years now, so I didn't use as many sources in this episode as I usually do. Also, there happens to be an article in the upcoming newsletter about Kakigori, and it was written by Fiona Chandra, so look for that in the coming weeks. I've already read it, and I can tell you that it is well-researched. So there you go. In the meantime, I used an article by Tejal Rao in the New York Times. It talks about sort of kakigori and various shave ice desserts in their many manifestations. There is also a book, an old book, about 40 years old, called A Japanese in the Philippines. That's how you know it's old. It was written by someone named Kiyoshi Osawa, and that's where I got a lot of the cultural stuff, like about the food markets and whatnot. There are links to those sources in the show notes. Smart Mouth is a production of Table Cakes, a woman-owned podcast network in Los Angeles. I'm the woman who owns it. Go to tablecakes.com to see all of our shows. Smart Mouth is hosted and produced by me, Catherine Spires, and edited by Mika Grimm. Thank you for listening. A Table Cakes production.